Hello.
Hello.
Missed the sweet Skype music.
Is it sweet or music? Is it any of those things? No.
I don't know. It's musical.
Mm-hmm. Music to your ears.
Music adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
How's it going?
It's fine. CBB. How are you doing?
You know, same.
Mm-hmm. How was your run for the border?
It was all right. It was, you know, as expected. They were quick, reasonable. I consumed the food.
Mm-hmm. What was the order today?
Oh,
what mixture of the four items on their menu?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I got a what do you call it? Spicy potato soft taco and a cheesy gordita crunch.
What is in a, or I guess wrapped around a cheesy gordita crunch?
What is wrapped around it?
It's the gordita shell.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the fluffy, the extra carb around the taco shell. They have a cheesy gordita crunch that utilizes the nacho shell.
Mm-hmm.
It's too complicated to say all those words, so I just skip it most of the time.
But was it that thing that you're skipping?
What? The cheesy gordita crunch?
Yeah, you said it was too complicated to say most of the time, so you just usually skip it. So
no,
what?
No, I skip telling them to put the nacho taco inside the cheesy gordita crunch.
Okay, so then you don't order the one that's the nacho cheese shell. You order the regular.
The regular, the classic.
The classic cheesy gordita crunch.
Yeah, cheesy gordita crunch class. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with your carbs with extra carbs. Yeah,
there's some sort of sauce they put in there that makes it palatable.
Sure. I will take your word for it.
What did you get from Taco Bell tonight?
I had leftovers, so that was boring.
What kind of leftovers?
Well, it's just this meat and rice bowl kind of thing. It's kind of like a I don't know if you know what gyudon is. But that is sliced beef and onion and like a sauce over rice. It's like a Japanese thing. But then I don't have thinly sliced beef, so I have ground turkey. So that's kind of not the same thing.
Not a lot of ground turkey used in Japanese food.
No. The end effect, I guess, is more like Taco Bell filling than it is like the original result. But
ground turkey is a leftover, too. That's mm-hmm. That's tough sometimes.
Well,
it's already dry.
Well, it's got the sauce, though. So like if it was like a turkey, ground turkey patty, like no sauce, then that would be dry. You couldn't even reheat that. You would just be like eating sawdust. So yeah, I have to draw the line somewhere.
You drew that line in sauce.
In sauce, yeah, because this is the kind of sauce where it clings. It clings.
Does it pour though, or just cling?
No, I mean I don't generally pour like lumpy meat stuff onto things, but it's not really very appetizing to think about that.
I'm not here to judge your lumpy meat sauces.
No. I love my lumpy meat sauces. All right.
I like when we say references to memes that nobody will remember, and if they do remember by the time, you know, we ever get back to listening to these episodes, we will have no idea what we're talking about.
No, I mean, we generally don't remember by the time someone listens and tells us that they laughed at one of these things.
Yeah.
Like 2 to 3 weeks from now, we'll be like, sure. I remember
if we
that.
Just deleted these episodes as soon as they were like done, it would probably have the same, you know, like net effect on our lives.
Yeah. Or on most people's lives, I have to assume.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Definitely like globally. If you consider the net effect, but yeah,
it would not be the same as eradicating Nirmata.
No, that has a big effect.
Which, if my notes here are correct, that is not a grunge rock band from the early 90s.
Yeah, I don't know, Dan. I'm gonna say something controversial. I like this movie, but And it's a big butt. And I cannot lie. I just don't love Gareth Edwards' writing. It's not good. Like he has a vision, and he has an amazing sense of taste and style for like stuff that he puts on the screen and composition and like where things are going in the scene, like blocking things out and all that kind of stuff. But then the second you kind of like need to step back and you just stitch all the scenes together, then you're like, oh, that doesn't flow. Like all of a sudden the movie just kind of veers off and goes into a different direction every now and then, and you're just like, okay, but the point is largely like you can follow the vibe that he's going for here, much in the way our last person we were talking about was Wes Anderson with his vibes. Like, you kind of get the gist of what Gareth Edwards is getting at.
I mean, especially upon reflecting, excuse me, on his career, like his past films. Like he likes humanoid robots, he likes large floating spacecraft, he likes intermixing humans and robots.
Yeah, and he has a good understanding of the kinds of science fictiony things that appeal to me, because he kind of grew up in the same era as, well, you and I did. So the movie has these sort of like 80s future vibes, you know, instead of being like modern future vibes, and it kind of
he likes a dirty future.
Yeah, and he has referenced in a couple interviews that the movie is like a love child between Blade Runner and Apocalypse Now, and
I see the Blade Runner is the Apocalypse Now, just all the jungle stuff.
Yeah, it's basically like the
murder in a jungle.
it's the sort of like anti-war imperialism, like crushing other cultures stuff, and a lot of that is, you know, well, we shot it in Asia, so that imparts that. I don't feel like that messaging is subtle.
I was just going to say, I don't think he addressed the Americans coming in and wiping out the locals with any degree of subtlety. It's just you know, a lot of crying and screaming and brutality for 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Yeah. Here's the thing. He's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong, but yeah. It's also like there's not a lot of ups and downs. Like the pace of this movie is pretty consistent. There's not a lot of room to breathe, so it's a lot of sameness. So after a while of Valis and Janney just murdering natives and robots and stuff, you're just like, all right, that's just what she does now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's my internal bias. That's my American complacency with the horrible atrocities that are being committed to all these people, is because I just see it so often and with such repetitive nature that I'm numb to it at this point.
Yeah, well, and that's why with science fiction lets you have the opportunity to sort of recast what you're trying to tell, like a more of a metaphorical sense. Like, you don't have to like put the exact label on something. Like, instead of naming a country that the U.S. is doing this to, it is New Asia, which seems broad, but that is apparently the political entity that it were. Collection of political entities that the U.S. is against here, and then you would think that they would do the same thing, where they would be like some sort of like Western conglomeration. They would say like New America, or they would say like New, you know, Northern Hemisphere, New West, or whatever. But instead, they're just like, nope, it's the U.S. It is the Americans. To put a direct label on that part of it, I think is actually pretty bold, and I wouldn't say refreshing, but it is unusual to have a larger budget Hollywood movie be so bold as to critique American political and military force in such
a
way.
It's not a huge leap, to be honest. You look at the response post 9/11 and you imagine somebody setting off a nuclear device in downtown Los Angeles. Yeah, America's probably going to go a little nuts on the rest of the world.
Yeah, of course. And so that's what I don't fault that choice that was made there. I think it is the correct choice. I'm just surprised that he was gutsy enough to do it or was allowed to do it. Like, I can imagine a studio note being like, can we call these guys like New West or something like that? Can we like not have it specifically be the Americans? But and I don't know if those conversations were ever had at any point in the development process, but I like that Gareth Edwards was just like, nope, it's this specifically. But yeah, in terms of like the pacing, like you were saying, like there is a sameness to it a lot of times because they're just being chased for the whole movie. So
there's a lot of running. There's a lot like, you know, I don't know if you want to get into breaking down the individual problems, but there's a lot of like every scene is basically like they're rushing in to do something and they got to rush in, do it. And then they got to rush back out because the town they're in is immediately going to be destroyed. That happens like four times in a row.
Yeah. The Nomad thing gets repetitive. Also, I don't know if it's just me, perhaps, but I found Nomad a little hard to like really understand. Not in terms of like we wouldn't build a super weapon that does this stuff, but in terms of like how the movie's depicting the super weapon. The best way to sneak
you're
up on
about, like the fact that in the beginning, it kind of operates like Independence Day, where it has to be directly on top of something. And then at the end of the movie, they're just like, screw it, we're going to launch them all from wherever we are. And then also we're going to like project our lasers in places.
Yeah, because they do this thing to like the future-y sauce they try to put on top of this is that there's this blue laser technology that they have, which helps them get an exact target whenever they use it, which doesn't.
Very cool.
It looks neat. But it doesn't make a lot of sense if you think about it. And also, it, like, for a variety of reasons, because line of sight is not good necessarily, because you could very easily get out of the line of sight of an enormous floating space station that you can see in the sky. and also the enormous floating space station with the blue light is not subtle. So there are a couple times in the movie where they're just like, Nomads found us. And it's like, yes, you could see it. It's like a hurricane moving in on,
I
like,
mean, you know, there's lots of hills. Like, it could come out from behind a hill and surprise you.
Peekaboo. No, but it is also another thing where I couldn't figure out the scale of Nomad because it's a few times it's in the lower Earth atmosphere and sometimes it's up above. And so you kind of are just like, well, is it like a couple 100 feet? Like, what are we talking about here? Like, there are little windows on it, but they're like little dots that could be like LEDs. I have no idea what the like scale of that is supposed to be. It's not like it's human readable. But then when the plane goes up in the final act of this movie, and it's like an enormous huge freaking space station, you're just like, oh, that doesn't seem like what we were watching earlier, just hanging in the sky all the time, moving around onto targets stealthily. But whatever. It looks cool. And I think that's the thing. It's just like he's going for the looks of the thing more so than anything else. But and like the tanks are like that too, where they have the same blue laser thing. And they, like it's an interesting idea. I thought that the tank scene's really well done. But you know, you kind of have to like suspend any sort of like disbelief about how like G.I. Joe it is. So
they have a tank the size of, you know, half of the city.
Yeah. It doesn't, you know, it's not maybe as useful as you might think, but or easy to deploy. But apparently it gives you that sort of like AT-AT Walker thing on Hoth kind of situation of like something's coming over the trees, like that kind of stuff, like monstery kind of stuff, like big bulking thing. So
you didn't expect a yellow Hummer H2 to come flying through the trees down the hill?
No,
but bad boys did.
I know, when they're in Cuba and they're escaping.
That's
yes
good.
Mm-hmm.
I like that part.
Yeah, but I didn't expect it here. Although that would have been interesting.
Yeah. you know what? I'm just going to say Bad Boys 2 earned its 2+ hour length runtime more than this movie did.
Yeah, I'm going to say something controversial. I'm going to go back to the very beginning of this movie. And I'm going to ask you a question. How do you feel about fake newsreels as your introduction to a movie.
It was kind of cool. I mean, it's been done, but I like the way they kind of like rewound time, like the alternate timeline of it all. And you see like 50s era stuff through to the future stuff. I laughed a little when I saw like a fully metal simulant running in like a track and field race. Cause that's odd.
Yeah. But
you know, it's, you know, they rounded the corners, the footage. So it's old.
I'm just going to say, I don't think it was very effective in this instance because I don't think that they made the footage feel like, it was of a progression of time, because it seemed like we were looking at the simulants that we see in the current day, in the past.
It's a bit odd. Even the ones that are like statues on the pillars in the temple at the end there, clearly they're carved in stone and they've been there for a very long time, but they basically look like the ones that are in the rest of the movie. It's a little hard to tell sort of if and how those things evolved. Maybe just, you know, they knocked it out of the park with the initial design of the simulants, such that by the time they got to, you know, full metal humanoid shaped robots, they didn't really have to iterate on them much more in hardware. The software could just do the thing.
Yeah, I don't know. It just wasn't as effective for me when they like have the simulant with the circular pole inside of the head, and then they've got like the 1950s starburst like graphic text that's floating there that's supposed to be like have the appearance of being optically composited. It's like that's that doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
And then the more robot-y simulants that had like the flat head are kind of cool, but they were there the whole time through as well. I guess maybe those are the slightly older ones. I don't know, it's hard to say.
Yeah, and if you're going for, let's say, the love child of Blade Runner and Apocalypse Now, I don't feel like the beginning of The Incredibles is a good way to do it. I don't know if you remember the beginning of The Incredibles, but it's good. It's a newsreel beginning and stuff like that, but it's supposed to be period specific to the kind of film that it is, where they're in the sort of like a timeless mid-century era. Mm. And with this, it is not timeless. And then
I forget, do they start Starship Troopers with a newsreel, or do they just scatter the newsreels throughout? So I feel like they started it with one.
No, they started it and scattered.
Okay. Yeah. Like, but those war and stuff.
Yeah, but those are different newsreels, because it's more like the
not historical.
Yeah, it's supposed to be
it's like recent past, like there's an attack and stuff.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be like in world for them in their contemporary time, whereas this newsreel is not contemporary to the period we're watching in this world.
So what did we learn in the newsreel, and what did we need out of that newsreel? That's where we learned about the explosion in Los Angeles, which, you know. I guess we need some of that information up front, but like we learn about it later through both flashbacks and actually seeing Ground Zero at points. There's some weird flashbacks, especially in the first like third of this movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know that they would have fit better in linear time, but they're also just kind of odd in terms of like where they're scattered. They're trying to do like a thing where, you know, the person is like thinking about the past, so then you see it, and then you come back to them, but it doesn't really quite feel like that. But yeah, so we learned about blowing up LA.
Mm-hmm.
And what else did we learn?
Blowing up LA, we learn about
AI.
We learn about Nomad. Like whoever the Colonel President General is of the U.S. Mm. Making his joint speech. He says that.
Yeah, that's not the guy in the newsreel, Colonel General President, is not the one from the rest of the movie, right?
No, right. That's somebody else.
It's a different James Cromwell looking Colonel President.
Yeah.
General.
Yes. But a different older gruff white man. It is.
We got so many of them. That's why AI will never win. We have a limited supply of older white gruff men.
And so I don't find the beginning to be helpful, and I don't feel like it sets the appropriate mood for the following scene at all, because then we go into stealthy, you know, beach insertion like thing that's going on with like the double agents and all this other stuff. And it's just like, did we at any point need this newsreel to preface that, to like, you know, get us all up to speed on it? I don't think so.
I mean, we needed something, just to, I don't know, to sort of establish, I don't know, I was gonna say establish stakes, but we don't establish stakes, we just sort of establish the world.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like the beginning of the movie just maybe doesn't give you a broad enough view of what the vibe is, because it goes straight into the, you know, the little mini love story that feels a little contrived.
Yeah,
I don't know how better to have started it, but it is, you know, it's fine. We're probably spending more time on it than it's worth.
But yeah, it's
a little cliche to start with, but it's not the worst version of that we've ever seen.
No, I don't feel like it helps set the mood for the movie. I feel like it kind of undercuts because it's sort of goofy to do that, but I like the movie, I have no personal issue with Gareth Edwards at all. I think he's a really smart guy in a lot of ways.
Can I admit something to you, just between you and me right now?
Okay, just between the two of us in a non-recorded environment.
Just between you and me, I thought Gareth Edwards was Neil Blomkamp up until now. not like as a person, but I just merged the two of them in my brain. I'm like, of course he made this movie. Did you see District 9?
Oh, Dan.
Did Neil Blomkamp also did Chappie, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like his robot movie.
You merge these two dudes together. It's like, of course they're doing that. Like, that makes total sense. This is the third in the trilogy of District 9, Chappie, and then the creator. It's the spiritual successor to Chappie.
Oh, could you please write that down? Thank you. I'm going to be honest with you. I could not bring myself to watch Chappie, even ironically.
I've never seen it either.
Yeah, no. So I don't know. It's just everything
you
about
saw
it.
The trailer, so you've seen Chappie.
I know. And that's how I felt about this movie up until I started. Let's say there were some mixed reviews. Our mutual friend.
Had you seen a lot of like trailers? Thanks for this. I don't think I saw a single trailer for it.
Yeah, I saw trailers when they had the first trailer for this. And it was actually released quite a long time before the movie came out, the first trailer. And people were like, oh, I'm so excited to see what Gareth Edwards does. It looks so cool. And then I watched the trailer. I was like, I don't know. It kind of looks like Terminator 2, like in the trailer, because they have a lot of like the shooting laser shots and robot people and like,
yeah,
you know,
but it's in New Asia.
Yeah, I know. And so it was just kind of like, I wasn't convinced. And then when our mutual buddy said it was terrible and that it was so derivative and he didn't like it at all and blah, 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 blah. And he saw it in theaters. And so he was just really upset
about
it.
Who said that, or are you anonymizing?
Well, Austin said it, but I suppose it could be anonymous. He said that and I was just like, ah, well, that's kind of a bummer. Because I know he likes sci-fi stuff. And so I was like, well, that's, well, not like real sci-fi stuff like me.
Although, I mean, you can take that review with a pretty big grain of salt because he's also kind of a weirdo.
Yeah, that's true. That was kind of like, well, I was like, okay, well, I'll just wait. And then, you know, there's some mixed reviews and then I was starting to see like the behind the scenes stuff. And then I was like, all right, fine. And so I watched the whole movie and I was just like, well, I wasn't immediately won over, but I've had a good time. And so I found it enjoyable and I like looking at it and I think it looks really good.
It's a beautiful movie.
Yeah.
We should get that out of the way, like before we start saying mean things about it, but it's a beautiful movie. The visual effects work, I think, is fantastic. Not just because I know some of the people who worked on it, but it's great. Like, you know, as you say, the vibes are very good here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I was trying to get earlier before we started crapping all over the beginning of the movie. Is that I appreciate everything he does in the construction of a scene. I think Gareth Edwards does an amazing job. And he knows what he's after and he's got the right people and I think that they really pulled it off. And that's everything from production design, cinematography, on set explosions and special effects and smoke and things. And then, you know, the casting, because we've got a lot of first time actors on screen, and we have our veteran actors who are having to be thrown into these weird environments. We've got interesting locations. They shot a lot of this on location.
We have two DPs. Do you know why that is?
Yes, because Gareth got Greg Fraser to do it, but because they had worked on Rogue One together, but Greg Fraser had to go to do Dune Part 2 when that got greenlit. I guess that overrode whatever they had for the creator. So it kind of got split off with Oren Sofer doing the rest of it.
Interesting.
And... well, not the rest of it. I don't know. It was never clear to me the exact split. I got the sense that Oren was on set in Thailand for like all of that. And maybe, I'm not sure, but it seems like Greg was somewhere involved in this process. But I followed Oren Sofer on Instagram a while ago because he had a some cinematography podcast. I listened to like three episodes of. Sorry, Oren, if there's no way he would hear this. I've fell behind. But they talked about other stuff with other like smaller productions and things and how they were doing things. And I found the conversations they were having interesting. But the stuff he's been posting is all the behind the scenes stuff about how they were doing things and a while ago, everybody was making such a big deal about the camera. And so he was like, well, it's not just because of the camera, guys, and posting about that stuff on there. And so that was good. So he was a smart guy. And to go to the camera thing briefly, one of the things about this movie that a lot of, I guess, nerds talked about was the Sony FX3 that was used to shoot this. Mm. And
one of the little guys, isn't it?
Yeah, the real itty bitty. Like, look, if you pull it up online, it's very small, and it is, I would say, probably in the category of prosumer, more so than it is like a professional film camera thing.
Oh, there's a lot of cameras listed here.
Yeah, but
well, that's interesting.
Yeah, but apparently, when they were shooting stuff on location in Thailand, especially night stuff. They did tests with the FX3 and they liked it because it was small and they could move it and that it could go to like
frame too, so you can get the bigger sensor look.
Yeah. And it goes to 12,000 something, whatever. So they could like shoot with moonlight, and then just add some, you know, smaller LED panels, which they wanted to do, and like the look of. So it's just an interesting thing, but I felt like at the time, a lot of the publications that I was seeing writing about the FX3 stuff kind of made it seem like you just buy one and then you can shoot the creator. As opposed to like, you know, there's the lighting and the sets and locations. And I mean, yeah.
Yeah. There's also an FX9 listed here. A Nikon Z6. I find very funny. That must've been like a crash cam or something. Cause that's hilarious. And then a DJI Mavic 2, which is great. Guess you gotta get those drone shots somehow, but
yeah. Well, and you know that shot of them driving towards the nuclear destroyed beach, where they're in Drew's truck thing and they're driving through like a rocky canyon?
Maybe.
Okay, well, that it looked like, you know, a rocky canyon whatever thing, but it was actually just like a little bit of a riverbed that they passed, and we're just like, oh, you know what? That looks like we could use that. And so Oren put the camera on a slider and then just moved it slowly across. And so it looked like a drone shot from up above. But it was just like little tiny rocks instead of big rocks and a big drone. So it's just very funny to me that they went through that effort. But and that was one of the things that I saw Oren post about. But then I also saw today when I watched there was the Corridor Digital thing. I'm going to be very honest. I don't love the Corridor Digital videos. But I have watched a few of them, especially when Todd was on, and then also when Gareth Edwards was on to talk about the creator. And that was one of the shots that Gareth broke down on there. So if someone is interested in seeing some of that stuff, they can do that. But you have to watch the Corridor Digital guys react, unfortunately, to everything.
You're going to make me have to go find another link.
Sorry. And then
this was all anamorphic, wasn't it?
I think so. I mean,
at least some of it was, which explains the absurdly wide aspect ratio.
Yeah, well, and also the incredibly heavy distortion, heavy barrel distortion on everything, and also bokeh and blah 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 blah. And I think that really helped them make it feel more expensive. Because if you watch, not the Corridor Digital one, but if you go to the ILM YouTube channel, they've got a VFX breakdown reel, and you can see the stuff that they replaced in there. Like when they first go into that underground facility, it's just like some, I don't know, place that's got like white walls and stuff, and then they just like replaced all the walls behind the soldiers running around and everything, and it's just like, yeah, you know, none of this was there and they did it all, but because it's all like warpy and stuff, it just looks like it is this big expensive set that's there instead of, you know, feeling too crisp or too clean. So it was interesting. And then speaking of the ILM YouTube channel, Todd interviewed Gareth and Jay Cooper and the other heads of the VFX stuff and the special effects supervisor on their ILM YouTube channel to ask them some questions so people can listen to them discuss that kind of stuff too. One thing I wasn't sure about was how planned all of this was, since all the conversation seemed to be like moving fast, shooting like an indie film, blah 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 blah. And then you find out that, yeah, that it just kind of would like just show up, and then Gareth would be like, I like the way the sun's hitting that, I like the way the wind moved the smoke over there, so move the camera over here. But that you know, they needed to be able to like plan for like having explosions and stuff, so there were some storyboards.
Pretty big sets. Like, I mean, even for whatever budget constraints they may have had, it didn't seem like there were a whole lot of constraints.
No. Well, and that's one of the other stories that got out there. It was the FX3. And then the, what was it? The $80 million budget looks like $200 million.
such a funny thing to say.
Yeah.
$80 million is a lot of million dollars.
I mean, just got to think about inflation, Dan. But
$80 million is really like $30 million these days?
No, but also like we've seen some very bad $100 million movies.
Oh, sure.
And I would say that the way that they chose to spend their money here makes it look like more money than it might be.
But I think a lot of that goes to directorial tastes, like you were talking about before. Like it's very easy to spend a lot of money on bad VFX, but they spent money here in good places. Although, I mean, their tracking budget must have been absurd on this, just to get all this stuff on the heads.
Yeah, that's one of the other things that I found interesting about both the interviews, was that apparently the people who Alfie had little dots, tracking markers for the head replacement stuff, but just like I think 4 dots total, which is not a lot of dots replacing the back of somebody's skull. So that's a lot of work. But then also you had everybody else, and apparently Gareth didn't tell anybody, he started by telling a couple of people like, oh, you're a robot, you're not a robot, but then they didn't know how to act, and he's like, no, you just act like a person, we'll just make you look like a robot, and then they just decided not to tell anybody. So Gareth wouldn't make any decision on who was a robot and who wasn't a robot until they got into editing, because sometimes you would see an actor or something very briefly, and so if that had been the one that you had gussied up in a bunch of tracking markers, then you'd be disappointed to be like having all your money off frame or almost off frame or out of focus or something. Whereas here you can be like, oh no, you really see this person, I want that one to be they're in like 15 shots. I want that one to be the robot. And then in this one, I want that one to be the robot. It makes it feel like
you can mix and match, make sure you've got an even sort of balance between humans and robots in some of the scenes.
Right. And instead of having to make the decision, like you're like laying out a place setting and then shooting the whole entire thing and then being like, oh, well, I didn't catch all of the ones that I shot. And they did the same sort of situation with the environments where they would shoot at a place on a location, and then James Klein, the production designer, would like use Photoshop and just like mock up a like almost a matte painting of what it would look like, and then they would detail that out, but just for that one angle. They wouldn't like build an asset for like a location or something like that, whereas usually, at least when, you know, I worked at a movie house that would do this stuff, you would just be like, okay, so this is the whole environment that we have for this place, and it's this big huge asset, and you bring in the whole asset, or you bring in this part of the asset, and you use this asset in this part of the thing, and blah 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 blah, and it's a whole realized whatever, and you might detail it out more if the camera gets too close to something. But with this, it's just like, we're not going to build the whole thing, we'll just do the little thing you see, almost like a matte painting.
Which is interesting, because the, you know, this video I have playing in the background here on mute, just the ILM making up stuff, they did, you know, Stagecraft LED wall stuff, so they needed some assets in places, at least for lighting things.
Yeah, and Charmin Chan, who did a lot of the Mandalorian stuff and whatever, went to the UK, ILM UK, and does the production stuff there. So she worked on this and had been posting about that too. But like, they had some. Also, less, how should I say, less like 360 will move around in the environment, you know, like in Unity kind of a situation. Instead, some of it was Gareth had bought some footage of like out of a car stuff like you would use for a car comp, and then projected it just with like a standard projector, like rear screen on a big screen outside the window, and put some rain stuff on the exterior glass of the window, drizzling over it. Like when they're driving to that destroyed beach house thing in Drew's truck thing. And so that was just like all, you know, quick and dirty. It wasn't like the full ILM volume for that. It was a much smaller scale affair. Just like almost, you know, almost like a very old school rear screen projection, kind of effect.
I mean, it gets the job done. I mean, it just again, sort of speaks to the team working on the movie being kind of smart about how they're doing stuff, which is interesting to say, because it sounds like a lot of it is just like, shoot it and we'll figure it out later. But also, the people who are doing that and saying those things, could kind of back it up a little bit, but
one impression I got from the interviews was that Gareth seemed to know what he wanted when he was like there shooting it and in the environment, and was sort of like making his own mental notes about things, but was not always forthcoming about what he had planned. But it's different from, I think, other directors who are just like completely just like an empty. They're not thinking about what will be there really. It may not even be designed yet or whatever. Like they're just like, whatever. Like and then you pan up and you see a thing, or it's all in green screen, and so you don't feel like anchored to any choice you've made. But with this, it's all anchored to some environment, for the most part. I
mean, he's made a Star Wars movie. He knows what the deal is. He knows how this thing works.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I just found the one here where the military dudes are running through, and there's just like a bunch of like random white walls back there, and they turn it into machines and pipes and catwalks and things.
Yeah. And then they drop in those things that were floating, the tubes in the midground. And that's like,
oh, there it is. Okay. Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's they're in like a, just like a power station or whatever. Just like, it was just big, like a circuit breaker box or something on the back there. This is some nice work here. Just like in terms of like, taking a large, odd environment and just doing some digital production design and making it very interesting. Although it is, you know, it's another one of those things where you're like, we're replacing so much of this frame. Like, could we not have just like put some stuff here when we were shooting?
Yeah, well, like you said earlier, like I can't imagine tracking was any fun, especially, you know, anamorphic is, you know, people might think that tracking is kind of a solved problem because you can do it with your phone, right? You can do it with your Vision OS that you have strapped to your head. But it's not that easy, and especially not with anamorphic lenses because they squish and they squeeze your light coming in. And you squish and you squeeze all your straight lines. And maybe you kind of don't have 100% fully whatever aligned stuff there for which direction things are squished and squeezed along. So you might have to make sure you adjust your lens distortion shot for certain shots or certain sequences, certain different lenses, because not all of them are created equal, like you were noticing, and not all of them will look the same on different film backs. So fun. I'm glad that's not my problem. I'm not very good at 3D tracking, by the way, just to like let that out there.
That's why there's companies that do just that, because you don't want to be good at that. That's
no.
A lot.
And what really impresses me is when you get like a, an environment, you know, track where they can put down some rough geo and stuff, or like some little like floating pyramid triangle shapes that you see, and grids and stuff like that, little cards and planes and whatever. And maybe just like one human in a bind pose standing in the middle. Then you go into your hard tracks where you've got like, oh, so we'll have, you know, a car that we've tracked or something like that, where it's a moving object that will also be tracked along with the camera. And then you go even further, and then you got your soft track, which is your humans and stuff, where there's like bending arms and stuff. And the worst of it is like, okay, so here's a human hand. And it's like, good luck with that. I'm not going anywhere near trying to match move the fingers and nails and everything that a human hand has. And you know, the creases and wrinkles and where the like fat deposits are on the face and your muscle mass and stuff like that, and where the hard bone, you know, areas are that you're going to be like fixed in place. Like, it's just a lot of stuff to deal with. So I don't envy anyone dealing with that.
It's basically 3D roto, just with meshes, which is just a horrible, horrible thought.
Yeah. And if anybody's just like, I don't understand why that would be so hard. Well, imagine you could line up stuff in X and Y, and you're like, great, that works. And then it's like, oh, but it's not the right size or something like that. I'll just move it in Z. And then it's like, oh, now it doesn't line up in X and Y anymore. And then you got to move it in X and Y again. And then I guess the Z is not right, and then you move it in Z. And so it really can mess it up for you, bringing it forwards and backwards. It's not just like an issue of like tracing an outline. But, you know, that's why people do it, like you said. That are not me.
There's a lot of, I'm just, the other, this reel is just still like washing over me. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of incredible just design work in this too, just the robots and the vehicles and things.
I really like James Klein's work. He's done a few things. I can't remember all the other stuff off the top of my head, but he was on Rogue One, and he's a very good production designer. He's got that 80s aesthetic, like Gareth Edwards said he was going for, like a Sony Walkman kind of a thing from the 80s. And I think they have that vibe down here. Now, like I had said earlier when I was talking about some of the stuff, it's just like, if you step back and you're like, does this make sense? The answer is usually no, but it looks really cool.
I mean, it makes about as much sense as anything in like WALL-E or any stuff like that. Or, you know, at least the thing that Blade Runner had going for is that like most of that stuff was like trashed and destroyed. So you don't have to be like, how does that actually work? It's like, no, it's just broken. It's just bits and stuff. This one, a little cleaner.
Yeah.
Although this one thing that's in front of me right now, the octopus machine at the end there.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. It's a bit much for me. The rest of the world fits together pretty nicely, but I don't know about engaging a squiddy from the Matrix to attack a guy in a spacesuit.
Well, there's some stuff that doesn't make a lot of sense with how they treat AI. And also, I should be clear, we're talking about like 1980s AI. We're not talking about like LLM ChatGPT AI.
Yeah, I it's a little disheartening the way they leaned into AI so hard with this movie. Just, you know, Terminators or whatever. We're talking about smart robots that are indistinguishable from humans in certain contexts. They're just calling that AI, which is just very, it's just like our understanding of the term AI does not fit in with this movie, really. But like, I guess they say AI enough times that we're going to be okay with their interpretation of it or something.
Yeah, I mean, in all fairness, I don't think they expected ChatGPT to like explode onto the scene right before the movie came out. But because also the large language model stuff is not really what it's not general AI. Like, it has no actual intelligence. It's sort of like mushing things together that it's copied.
I mean, they could have just stuck with simulants or something. They didn't need to say AI. But they use AI like it's like they describe it as like it's some sort of like hive mind of connecting everyone together, which is not really part of this story, as far as I'm aware.
No, they do a very piss poor job of explaining what the relationship is between the AI people and stuff. Like, everyone is just sort of like, it's like there was a person. Every time they say AI, it's like there is a human being, basically, but they're just AI. And so they're an individual, discrete unit. They are not considered to be clones or copies, even though they reuse like the likenesses, which I thought was kind of funny when I was watching. It was just like, so you guys need to have exact permission to reuse somebody's facial likeness.
The billboard, the donate your likeness billboard.
Yeah. And it's just like, I understand the thought process behind that, but it's like one of the things we have trouble with right now is that people just copy things without asking. So it's hard for me to believe that they would have like a shortage of faces. But
I enjoyed a scene where somebody like came across their unlicensed double in public and said, "Hey, how dare you?"
Yeah. Or like legal cases where like people are suing people in New Asia for stealing their face or something like that.
They had their Times Square there with video walls. Like, let's see a Judge Judy episode where somebody is suing an AI for taking their likeness.
Yeah, or like the controversy around a major studio bringing back an actor by having a simulant that looks like them. Like, something like that would have been interesting, but you know, that's not the direction of this movie. I'm just saying, like, there's just
a little too silly for this dark, gritty movie.
They could have put it in the newsreel. But there's just like the AI, there's no like a intelligent computer here, really. They have translators, but they are just basically speaking spells. And they have, you know, like the ticket reading machine and like other stuff. And it's just like, they're not depicted as AI or intelligent. Like the drones and robots and stuff that the humans have, like they're walking bombs. I don't know if that was too silly or goofy for you, but it was interesting.
It was a little silly the way one said, "It's been a pleasure serving you," or something, and before it ran off to explode. That was a little bit too, I don't know, Star Wars-y or something.
Well, it reminds me of, it's been a long time since I've seen it, so I could be misremembering the exact details, but in John Carpenter's Dark Star in the late 70s, it's like his first film, and it's kind of like, it's got like bits of Alien and Doctor Strangelove mushed together, but they're like trying to convince a bomb not to explode. Like, the bomb is intelligent. And so it kind of has like shades of that, I guess. But I, as far as I know, Gareth Edwards hasn't specifically referenced Dark Star. But it was a quirky thing to do. And I don't know how you feel about the sort of idea that Alfie is somehow their special savior because Alfie can reach out and alter other computers, but is also a girl that can grow up. And they didn't decide to like separate those two tasks into like,
well, there's your Blade Runner, right? Like, you've got the magical child or whatever, which was not supposed to have been possible or something. Yeah, there's a lot of Did we say good things yet? Did we say enough good things yet before we start getting into the bad things?
I feel like we said a lot of good things. We can circle back to more good things later. We can just make it like a shit sandwich.
All right, we'll do asterisk. We'll come back to the good things. I think you mentioned when we were discussing this offline that they don't have high expectations about the plot necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff here that is not, I don't even want to say it's not fully fleshed out. It's just like, it doesn't really do anything. Like, so we've got this mysterious unknown creator that they need to track down, which is very, Skynet of the whole thing. Like, you got to find Skynet and destroy it, but it's a person here, but we don't know who that person is, but they're the creator of the advanced AI. And we got to stop them before they make more advanced AI stuff. But the super advanced AI that they made is a human child. Well, it looks like a human child, but with extra fancy AI features to do extra stuff. It's a super weapon. It's a weapon, but it's also a child. You see the dichotomy there. And then turns out, but also the creator is the woman you loved the whole time. Surprise! It's just, maybe the real AI was, the love of children we found along the way or something. It's the story of it here is kind of, I don't know, it assists the mechanics, and we watch this action movie unfold of all the shooting and the blowing up, and we understand that, like, they're trying to get from A to B, but, like, I don't know. I don't know what this movie's trying to say or do or whatever, other than, like, war is bad. If you have a giant super weapon, use it for good by killing the people that think that you're the bad guy before they can kill you because they think you're the bad guy. I don't know, man. Me attempting to, like, boil this down and rationalize it is just going in circles in the same way the movie does. It's not great because, like, John David Washington, like, he does not like Alfie. He wants Alfie to take him to his wife. And then later he grows attached to Alfie and then loves Alfie because Alfie is a scanned clone of the unborn fetus of his child that died the night of the attack or whatever. Like, I swear to God, if they say the night of the attack one more time, like, I don't, the dialogue is the thing that got me in this one. More than any of the plot stuff, like, the plot stuff is, like, can be fairly forgivable because it's kind of a pretty high concept, which is to say not terribly complicated futuristic story about simulants and humans trying to coexist and which one is more human than human. They even say in the newsreel. But the dialogue is extraordinarily cheesy in places. And it's just like, I don't need to even hear these people talking. Like, you're saying things that I already knew, which makes me mad at you. And then you're also saying them in a very dumb way. Just so much exposition in the dialogue. I don't like it.
Yeah, well, and that's why I was leaning towards the newsreel feeling superfluous, because they talk about a lot of the stuff, like, Ground Zero and everything, that happened because of that. They talk about that in regards to Howell's dead kids, and they talk about that in regard to his job and everything like that. So it just, like, deflates renders it redundant, I should say, not deflates. Like, there's redundancy in here, especially with the flashbacks of his time with Maya. And I am not saying that the acting is bad. I think the acting is good and all the performances are good.
They're giving it their all in all these instances, but you can kind of feel like there are places where actors from time to time will say, like, they're putting their performance in the hands of a director, and they have to kind of just trust that, like, they're not going to make them look like an idiot through editing and things. And there are some spots in here where it's like, I feel a little uncertain as to whether or not it was used properly, but it's tough. It's also part of the pacing thing. Like, they're going 100% all the time, but maybe it didn't need to be that. But well, here's the question for you that I'm sort of thinking about when I'm babbling and not making any sense. A lot of this stuff is, like, really, like, conceptual, just like, again, the vibes. It's not vibes. It's like, you need to understand all the, like the world, the interaction between the AI, the humans, all this stuff. Like, you can't really do a show don't tell version of that very easily. And I think a lot of these movies fall prey to that. Like any sort of like futuristic movie, like even the Matrix in a lot of instances, like trying to, you need the audience to understand all these things, but like how would you show it in a way that would be more satisfying than just saying it with dumb words? Like, I don't know how you show a lot of the stuff in a way that like registers with the audience that this movie needs you to understand.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have an answer for that. Cause I feel like a lot of the issues with exposition, the expository stuff also go hand in hand with the plot things, because a lot of times they're saying things we already know from the way the plot is structured. And they're also talking about, or holding back things they should be talking about, like Nermada's identity, for example. That was saved till like, what was it, like 60-70 minute, no more than that, it was like 70 to 80 minutes into the movie.
I'll be honest, I had no concept of time in this movie. There was a point in this movie where I was like, okay, they're clearly wrapping this up, and I looked down at the time bar, there's 45 minutes left. I'm like, oh my god, no. And then when they got on the plane to go to the moon, I was like, we are not doing a scene on the moon. I swear to god, I will protest. And then they start swerving towards the space station. I'm like, okay, all right,
yeah,
well, keep watching for a little while longer.
It is terrible, like, really, when you think about it. It's just like, but why did you have to do that? Like, the ending of this just grates on me. Like, I feel like the
predictability of it, or what?
Well, the predictability of it, but also, like you said, it's long, and it just kind of happens because he wanted to have a battle on the space station. And it's just like, okay. I mean, it doesn't even, it's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, you store your AI, deactivated AI stuff, like Westworld style, up on your space station. That is your, you know, like armament to like protect humanity. It's like, it should really have both of those. But whatever, but that is because they want to have the scene where, he takes the thumb drive that has Maya's brain on it and then shoves it into one of the many Mayas that are standing around.
So they can have a nice moment where they reconnect and kiss as they die or whatever. It's cinematic and iconic, but you know, you've also got, from earlier in the movie, you got Chekhov's like, how does somebody survive that trip kind of thing, man? And it's like, yeah, I don't know. Cause they're talking about like sending Alfie up to Nomad to destroy it, but Alfie would die. But then, you know, you've got the, you're the clone of my unborn child fetus. So I'm going to sacrifice myself to save you. Even though you're potentially, I mean, they don't really address it, but like, aren't the simulants basically immortal or something? Like,
sort of. And there's the whole thing where John David Washington says that the farmer that he shot is off, not dead, off. And it's just like, well, does that mean you could repair them infinitely? But then we see a robot funeral at one point where they're burning a robot on a pyre, on a funeral pyre. And it's just like, okay.
It's an incredible image, but does that make any sense?
No.
But I mean, right down to the fact that Allison Janney's got a briefcase that'll scan dead people's brains and you can put them on a flash drive, even if you can only talk to them for a few minutes because they've been dead for a long time.
Well, I want to point out something about that really bothered me. Yeah. She scans the trooper who had died, our weirdo not friend that we don't actually like or care about, and then takes the thumb drive and then sticks it into the other simulant. And there's a great performance from that other actor trying to act like the actor we don't like. But it doesn't make any sense because they only have 30 seconds because the guy's been dead so long. That's all they could get. Whereas that's not how data integrity would work. You don't like, we can only conjure him for 30 seconds. Like, he would be missing stuff is how it would work, not like he would be like a limited amount of time. And also, if he's been digitally copied onto your thumb drive, you could take the thumb drive out and put it back in again because it's a thumb drive. you are not expending a limited resource. It doesn't make any sense. It's digital.
Take the thumb drive to another person and I don't know. Maybe they only have move operations in this alternate future. They don't have copy operations.
It just takes too much storage. But I have no idea. It doesn't make any sense really when you stop and think about it for a second. And I felt like them meeting up on the space station after she's got her thumb drive in her sounds inappropriate. In the simulant, I don't feel like it really helped anything for closure, because they blow up. But
he got to be reunited with his wife, and then they both got to go to the heaven place.
Yeah,
which is the word I can't remember.
Yeah, you and John David Washington, and me too. But I don't know. I just don't appreciate. Appreciate is not the wrong word. I don't have an appreciation for the struggles of the brain copying mechanism and all of that. I feel like that was superfluous to what I really needed to see happen here.
Yeah, well, there's a couple things happening here, and it's like trying to do surgery on my own brain, so I can't come to the answer on my own. The question is basically, do we care about the fact that these sci-fi pieces don't fit together because they actually don't fit together and it's bothersome, or is it just because they stick out because the rest of the movie didn't grab us and pull us in a way that we can like suspend our disbelief for a lot of these other stupid things? Like, I think one of the reasons that we are irritated by some of these small technical issues is because there's not much else to latch on to, especially in the last act of the movie, as an audience. So we're just like, we're watching stuff happen. We're like, that doesn't make, like, we shouldn't be so distracted by these small things. We shouldn't recognize them as issues. We should be, you know, crying about the loss of the child or whatever the thing is. But it, you know, we know what's going to happen. They're going to get up there and he's going to sacrifice himself for the kid and the kid's going to win and stuff. And then, you know, it's going to rain down and then Will Smith is going to smoke a cigar. I was just waiting for it to end basically at a certain point.
Yeah. Just for the fat lady to sing.
I didn't hear no fat lady.
Mm-hmm. You're obsessed with the fat lady. But the, there, I agree.
Good note. Independence Day 1997. Is that what it was?
Nope, 94.
I was gonna say 94. Damn it, which one was 97? Oh, Men in Black was 97, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, but I don't know. The final act of this really does, it's just like, what? Okay, like you said, you're not going to the moon, but it really just kind of veers, I think, very sharply when Howell dies, when Alice and Janie dies, which I thought was a really good death. I liked how they executed that, where Alfie was trying to save her and then the stupid guy like tried to shoot and she's like, no, don't do that, you're gonna kill me, and then she dies. That worked out pretty well because it was kind of poetic. But then once that happens, the troops are like, oh, sir, you're a hero, you're coming back with us. And then they separate him and he's like shouting after her and they're like, nope, still a hero guy. And then they take him back to LA and then he's just like, everybody's just like, oh, wow, you're so great. What a hero. You just get to wander around, do whatever. And General Grumpy White Guy is like, we can't get close enough to terminate her, blah 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 blah, because cleanly, and we don't want it to be a mess. You don't want it to be a mess, do you? You better go in there and do it yourself, soldier. And then hands him the EMP thing to blow her brains out, and it's just like, what? It's a gun.
You're dropping like
nuclear warheads.
you're dropping like public bus sized bombs on cities, but you can't figure out how to kill a child without John David Washington doing it. The other thing, like with the Alice and Janney death scene there in the little temple, this is probably too mean, I'm sorry, but like where my brain went during that scene was me going, interesting. When I think about who is doing what in this movie and the hierarchy of characters here, let's see. What's the character's name? What's the dude from all the stuff?
Ken Watanabe's character's name?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Harun, is that what it is?
Could be.
Anyway, so I was watching the scene go, and I was like, okay, Allison Janney is like this big of a character, and John David Washington is this big of a character. So the person to kill Allison Janney has to be Ken Watanabe. And then I just sat there for 5 minutes and I waited for Ken Watanabe to kill Allison Janney. That's where my brain went. I was just like, I know which character is going to kill which ones because that's how this movie works.
Yeah.
And I was not watching the movie. I was waiting for that to happen.
Well, I was watching the movie. I mean, I knew that was going to happen because why wouldn't it? Like you said, this movie is very predictable, but I wasn't like counting down the seconds for it to happen. It wasn't distracting me in that way. But
no, because you have no idea which scene it's going to happen in because every scene is like they run into the town to do a thing and then they have to run back out before Nomad comes in and blows it up.
Yeah. But then once we get to LA and it's just like a free for all and stuff just kind of happening, then I'm just like, what is going on? Yeah. Like with the whole thing with once they think that he did the EMP thing and then they think she's dead and then he gets to ride with her and the ambulance thing.
They're so sophisticated. They think Alfie is dead just because it's in standby mode. Mm-hmm. They can't
determine the difference between the two things. He's like, just look for the blinking blue LED light, just like everything else I have with standby mode.
Tilt your head down and look and see what the switch says.
Yeah. And that also they're just like, yeah, sure, John David Washington, you go sit in the van with Alfie. You haven't gone native 3 times in the movie. You definitely should just be hanging out with the dead corpse of a child that we want to go study. Also, we for some reason put the laboratory where we were studying her alive very far away from the laboratory where we were going to study her when she's dead, which requires us transporting her across the city. And I don't understand that at all. You would think that they were in the same lab. That's what the whole lab would be for. But they just very specific functions for these labs, I guess.
Part of this is also like, I don't know. Again, alternate history, alternate universe, whatever you want to talk about. But like, we're a movie audience watching this movie and there's a lot of sophisticated stuff that happens in this movie, but there's a lot of dumb people doing extremely dumb things, which does not seem to jive with the general tone of things. Like
no
people should be smart. They should be smarter than they appear in this movie.
Yeah. And that really just goes into full effect when they hijack the plane. And all the people on the plane and when they get to the station, all the idiots on the station.
Did I need 2 shots of the lady on the plane saying, due to an emergency, due to an emergency, we're docking at a space station. Like, just give me one of those. I don't need both.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just,
this movie's too long. I'm sorry.
It's too long. I think it's the kind of movie where it's going to be good to like turn it on, play some vaporwave, and then go do some work in another window.
I got an app for you. No, I was reading the Wikipedia. There's a line in here that infuriated me. Sorry, where did it go? I don't even know where the line is, but it said something, the first assembly cut of this movie was 5 hours long.
Oh my God. How is there 5 hours of material?
There's no music too, because he just wanted to let the vibes happen.
Uh-huh. Well, he said one of his inspirations was Baraka. I know a friend of the show, Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences, Todd Vaziri, loves Baraka. I cannot stand it.
Do I know Baraka?
It is a movie from the 80s, I want to say, late 80s.
1992?
Okay, 1992. Where they do a documentary thing where they just like are filming slice of life stuff around the world in like various small villages and things. And it is so boring. And I know it is supposed to be like, wow, it's just like fascinating. Like you're feeling, you know, this documentary, like voyeurism of like looking into their lives and like feeling the connection to humanity and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, nope, I'm bored. So
isn't this what the app Periscope used to be?
I don't know, but
I mean, it's just like you would open a, you'd open an app and then you'd look and you'd be like in a camera, somebody's phone as they were like walking around a city.
Oh, I don't think it's that level of voyeurism, just like more like, I guess like National Geographic-y, like highbrow voyeurism. But voyeurism. Yeah.
It is perverted internet version.
Yeah. And Gareth Edwards said he tried to reference that a few times in this movie where he's got like the robot like sorting like grains and he's got the other robot opening a candy for a kid. And stuff like that, where you just wanted like that slice of life stuff that adds texture to the world.
There's
and, like,
a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. And it's like, that's all fine. And so what I would do to this movie is just like put on some vaporwave, put it on mute, and then put it in a window at the back. Because like it looks very, very pretty.
Cut out all the parts where people are shooting at each other. Just do the slice of life stuff.
I mean, speaking of shooting at each other and speaking of stuff that doesn't make any sense, and I'm not going to be like, oh, plot hole, but I'm just going to be like, remind everyone, there are two armed fighter jets that swoop in to the beach house and kill Drew and almost wound John David Washington, and they're swooping around, and then there's Ken Watanabe and buddies, and then they go back on a floating boat. And the fighter jets are never seen or used again. We are just scrappy, you know, independence fighters, revolutionaries, or, well, not even that, because they're fine in New Asia, I guess. They're not rebelling against New Asia. That part of it never made any sense, because they felt like the police, it's not really them, but they're not the police. They're not the government.
Just want to be left alone. Mm-hmm. But they're being blamed for an explosion, the LA explosion, which I didn't actually hear what he said when he said that, but I see it here in the Wikipedia thing. The nuclear explosion in LA was a coding error.
Yes, it was a human coding error. But they say that in the movie.
In God's name, missed a semicolon somewhere that resulted in a nuclear explosion.
I mean, you joke about it, but we have a lot of dumb stuff that happens with people
and
computers.
I feel like there's got to be a couple more checks on nuclear devices than code.
You would think that. But anyway, in the world of this movie, that is apparently what happened. But the thing that I find very hard to believe is a few times there's just like, and then the robots will defeat America and we'll all live happily ever after. And it's like, I don't know what America you guys think you're fighting. There's going to be like, don't tread on me robot flags for like a million billion years. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And it's just,
and the robots just want to be left alone. Basically, mm-hmm. the Americans are pissed that New Asia won't extradite the robots to America and just like murder them all or something.
Yeah. Meanwhile, without impunity.
Build a fence around that, Texas. I don't know. Well, like, what do you, what, just like mm-hmm. leave them alone and they'll leave you alone is basically what's going to happen.
I know. The threat of the AI to humanity is very vague. Other than humans' fear being replaced or humans' fear another nuclear incident. But the U.S. nuclear incident was caused by U.S. AIs, it seems like. It didn't seem like it was caused by New Asia nuking the U.S.
But also, Alfie has the power to shut down all technology, or I guess not just shut down, control all technology globally. If it was just like Alfie was like a global EMP, wouldn't the Americans be like, yeah, go for it, blow up all the computers, we don't care. But the problem is like Alfie could like, you know, do the little prey pose and then like make a nomad go blow up the White House or something.
Well,
right?
No, I mean, the problem with Alfie is that she could destroy Nomad. And the humans don't want to get rid of all technology. They want to get rid of all technology they don't control. that is their thing. It's like they it is about authority.
Control is an illusion, man.
Well, they're illusionists, I guess. They want to have the ability to enforce, with force, and you know, there's a lot of focus in this movie on destroying Nomad being like the turning point. I don't know why America still has enormous, terrible, awful tank things and running bombs and stuff. And
I mean, like, they built Nomad in response to the explosion, and that's they made it sound like we put all our eggs in the Nomad basket, and basically if we lose Nomad, we're pretty vulnerable to, I don't know, people just like running up and shooting, like they don't have any other like defenses or something.
Nomad is not even defensive. Nomad is an offensive weapon, like in both senses of the word. But it is, a floating nuclear bomb platform and AI study facility that just roves the Earth. So it's not like they're intercepting bombs that are heading for the U.S. because they couldn't. They're just floating over, you know, some lagoon in Thailand. Like
Without Nomad, they would fall victim to one of the classic blunders: never start a land war in Asia,
New Asia. I don't understand. It all just kind of, like you said, it's just like Independence Day all of a sudden at the end of the movie, and it's just like, okay, I mean, I guess, like, what'd you fix? I don't feel like anything was fixed by this. And Alfie, I mean,
they killed the current grumpy white general guy.
Eh.
They should have cut to on the ground, son of grumpy Colonel White general guy, watching it come down, and a tear come down his face, and then he, you know, grits his teeth and determines that he's going to spend the rest of his life killing AI for the creator part.
I don't understand it. I get the message of like, oh yeah, war stuff is bad, and you know, humanity fears and tries to destroy what it can't control. But just like, yay at the end? I don't know.
I mean, weird. I guess if there's a message at the end there, because they're worried about Alfie's powers becoming so big that Alfie can destroy Nomad and things. But at the end of the day, it was another human who destroyed Nomad.
Yeah.
It was the hubris of the human race to think that it was the robots that would destroy them, but it was their own kind. I don't know. There might be some sort of message there. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is that throwaway line that happens when Drew like looks at the hole in her head when they first get to like his factory thing. And he looks at it for like 2 seconds and says, she can grow. And when she grows, her powers to control things will grow exponentially. And it's just like,
yeah, that
looked at her for 2 seconds.
Pulls John David Washington aside and goes like, I need to talk to you, man. Like, that's just like, that is the prime example of bad writing in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Never seen anything like this before. Like, well, you've been looking at it for 2 seconds. Also, it's, you know, a spinny hole in the head. You've seen a few things like it.
Yeah. But with that, the whole thing is just like, okay, so what do we do with, what are we meant to take away from this? And the whole thing is just like, Alfie will use her powers to destroy Nomad so then they can have world peace.
But if you would have left her in that vault, she would have been using her powers to change channels and watch cartoons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, humans ruined everything.
Ruined everything.
Yeah. They are the ones who, installed Skynet or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Brew install Skynet. It's not even the command, is it?
Sudo make me a Skynet.
Sudo make me a Skynet. Exactly.
Yeah, I
shouldn't have used sudo. That was it. That was.
Yeah. Sudo RM star Los Angeles. Dash F.
RM star Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Dash F?
I guess. I mean,
no, it's RM dash R. Is it for recursive? What is dash F? I don't even remember.
Dash F is force, I think, force it to do it. But I think you have to put the dash F first.
If we paste this into the CMS, it's accidentally like run somewhere, just ruin the whole podcast network.
Well, we'll find out if Greg Noss and the people who worked at Movable Type have sanitized the input fields on the PHP forms or whatever is driving that. But
hit publish, all of our lights turn off in the Western Hemisphere.
You've destroyed everyone's cell phones as they open it up and it executes the code.
God. What if we're the code error? What if we are the thing that starts the creator? Somebody wrote sudo rm star Los Angeles dash F into a CMS, real type CMS, and it blew up all of Los Angeles and started the AI war.
See, it's not so far-fetched now, Dan.
Well, I don't know. I'm scared now. It's just in my text editor here. I'm scared to hit save.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen?
You can destroy your whole computer.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
My computer is not Los Angeles.
No.
I blow up your computer.
Yeah. That'd be unfortunate. But yeah, I think we've said all we can really say about this movie. It's beautiful. I think people should watch it. I think people maybe should mute it. I think the music is also not especially memorable. Sorry, Hans.
Oh God. Yeah. We didn't even touch on the music. Mm-hmm. That's another one of the things that adds to the, every scene feels like it's the end of the movie. It's like, mm-hmm. just like calm yourself down a little bit, Hans Zimmer. I know that's not what Hans Zimmer does.
You don't hire Hans Zimmer to calm yourself down. But the, or Hans Zimmer's ghostwriters more specifically, but, I don't feel like Hans Zimmer was the right fit for this project. And that disappoints me. I feel like they should have gone with someone who was going to do vaporwave, like stuff for the soundtrack. Like this is just too traditional Hollywood generic. Well,
Hans Zimmer did Blade Runner 2049, right?
Yeah, and that was okay. I mean, I like Seawall and a couple of the other cues in that, but he's no Vangelis, let's say. But
Burn, I don't know what that
is. Yeah, the Vangelis did the original Blade Runner soundtrack. But this just wasn't that punchy. And then there's a lot of other music that's mixed in here. Like the actual music, not just the score. But whatever, like I said, just put on some vaporwave, and listen to it on mute, or watch it on mute. Don't listen to it on mute. That wouldn't work. And then, RM-F star everything. And you'll be fine. Everything will be fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is nominated for, best visual effects, right?
Yeah. Which was part of the reason why I had the idea that we should do that. Soonish because it is.
Is that this weekend?
Sure. It could be. For your consideration, stuff is going on.
Who is nominated? We got Godzilla Minus One, haven't seen it. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, haven't seen it. Napoleon, haven't seen it. Creator, and then Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, have not seen it.
I saw part of it over somebody's shoulder on an airplane.
Mission Impossible?
Yeah.
Did it look like a Mission Impossible? I don't know.
It looked like a very let's just say the practical effects did not jump out when they were on the top of that train. Sick burn. But
March 10th.
Yeah.
The Oscars are in March?
I don't know. So Oscars get later and later every year. But the creator, I feel like, without having seen all of the entrance, is a noteworthy entrant, much in the same way that when we used to watch all of, remember the old days where we used to watch all of the people who were up for the visual effects Oscars?
Did we do that? It sounds like something we would do.
Yeah, well, and was it, we watched that was the year that The Martian came out. We watched like all of those, and we watched Birdman. Mm. And I like went to another plane of existence with my rage about Birdman. But we're not watching all of these. But sorry, Napoleon. Maybe it was Napoleon Dynamite that I would reconsider. But also Napoleon's so long, jeez. On Apple. But the other stuff, Guardians, has effects in it. It does, but I don't know. It kind of feels like a little more traditional Marvel. There's some stuff in there, but it's also like, I don't know. I don't want to not necessarily spoil it for you, but there's some of it feels like you're watching, like, I don't know, like Quake as a movie, which is a little weird. But I like this, and I don't know how much of that is the influence of how I feel about the production design or how I feel about the behind the scenes stuff or how I feel about any of that. But yeah. I appreciate what happened here, and I don't mean to dump on any other movie and to say that I'm not rooting for them or they don't deserve it in any way, because I don't feel that about anything that's up for the Oscars, except maybe, you know, I would like to stick it to Tom for his comments that he's been making about, you know, the practical effects all these years, but I don't feel like I want to do that to the crew that works on that movie. Like, they deserve recognition for their work. So I don't know. I don't like have a specific one that I would pick out of all of them, but I do appreciate this one the most so far, yeah, on a personal level.
I am going to go out on a limb and say, as a person who has seen one of these five movies, the one that I have seen is the one that I think should win.
Well,
I think it's good. I think there's a lot of good work in this movie. I think it's cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
As long as people just like watch the reel and like don't really think about the movie, then I think it'd be good. I think there are two. I don't think they would give it to Napoleon. I don't think they're going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to give it to a Godzilla movie. I don't think they're going to give it to a Mission Impossible movie, and I think they still have a general distaste of Marvel movies, so
mm-hmm.
the creator it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be like, like you said, there's that mental math that Academy voters do about the stuff that is beyond the quality of the work, and they did it that year that Deus Ex Machina won, where some people were upset about it because the scope of the work seems small to them, but the work that they did in Deus Ex Machina looked great, so it was good that they won, but it was just one of those situations where it's like they kind of won because it was a smaller scale thing, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know if that'll play any part in this, but it could.
Also robots.
Mm-hmm. Robots. Academy voters love robots.
Yeah, they go like, look at those robots.
Mm-hmm.
That one dude had a hole in his head.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like a hole in his head.
That's how you know they're a robot. And that's just like a person.
Spinning metal bits.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's going to be such bad design. Like, you're going to get dust in there. It's going to bind up.
Yeah, I mean, God, I can't even imagine. Just like the amount of compressed air that they have to go through to keep all that clean back there. And how do they clean their faces? Like, is that plastic? Is it synthesized? I don't know.
I mean, I think they're probably pretty waterproof. We didn't get a lot of insight into their power sources, whether they're, you know, nuclear or some sort of fission or something.
We saw them plugged into the wall when they were sleeping. Remember when he sneaks up on Ken Watanabe?
Tesla won the Charger Wars, didn't they?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They all use the North American charging standard, even though they're in New Asia, because they lost the charging standards war.
Look, I mean, if the biggest thing that came out of this movie is that, you know, all around the world we use the same plug for stuff,
mm-hmm.
I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, have you ever had to travel with one of those plug adapters?
Yeah. I think I just use one plug adapter and then I just put like a little power strip.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm lazy. I'm going to bring more than one.
No, I got like one of these, not exactly a cube, but more of a rectangular prism. And it just sticks into the wall. And then there's a bunch of little ports on the outside of it. And you can change the part that sticks into the wall. It like slides out a different plug that sticks into the wall. And it makes a gentle humming noise. So hopefully it doesn't catch on fire one of these days. But so far it's worked in the European Union area and in the UK, and maybe it'll work in other places that I go and won't kill me. So I appreciate all of those things about it, but you know, it'd be nice if I could just trust USB plugs. What if the robots used USB plugs? That'd be good.
Which one?
Well, it'd be Thunderbolt, but you wouldn't know it was Thunderbolt. Sometimes you go to charge and then it'd be a data cable. Sometimes you go to transfer data and then it'd be a charging cable. I don't know.
Sad.
Yeah.
Still so much, you know, difference between the people.
Mm-hmm.
Can't standardize on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We should.
That's why they had to burn that one on the pyre, because he didn't have a.
He was still on USB-A on the back of him.
Yeah.
Like, we can't be associated with a USB-A.
No. You
gotta burn.
Nothing we can do.
Solder to your logic board. Can't help you.
And scene.
Yeah. The creator.
Mm-hmm.
Nirmada.
Nirmada.
Nirmada's not here.
Nirmada. Maya, the whole entire movie. I'm just like, shut up. Why do you keep shouting it?
I only wrote down a couple of things.
Okay. It's okay. We'll probably pick one of them anyways, because we're tired. The spiritual successor to Chappie, pseudo Make Me a Skynet, pseudo Armed Star Los Angeles Dash F.
Okay. I'm gonna look up RM man.
Siri just told me that it found some results for pseudo RM star Los Angeles dash F. So that's good.
You are right. Dash F is Forrest. Look at that.
Yeah, but it should be up by the RM. I shouldn't have put it at the end. But
you said it better the second time. So I'm okay making that editorial change. Pseudo RM-F star Los Angeles.
Or we could just drop the dash F. It's cleaner.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Pseudo RM star Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Although, why is the star there? But
I don't. All right, we'll leave the whole thing that doesn't make any sense then, I guess.
Okay, I'll leave the dash F at the end. It's funnier
yeah.
than that.
Yeah.
Pseudo RM star Los Angeles dash F. They'll be like, ooh, what does that do?
Yeah, I'm just anticipating people just like sending corrective messages ahead of time, just being like, that's not how you do the command.
They'll have to listen to the bootleg to find out that we did it wrong on purpose for SEO.
Yeah, yeah.
We're like those people that like purposely do things wrong on TikTok so they can get more views, people telling them they're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.